buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live on a Friday from Knoxville, Tennessee, in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It's overtime with William Pattison and Dawson Wise. Kind of in the midway right now of Florida and Tennessee going in. They're currently in the ninth inning. Obviously, this game got delayed yesterday, so we got a doubleheader tonight. So it kind of works out nicely for us because we get to analyze game one and then talk about game two. Pretty tough back-to-back if you're a player, though, in the humid pre-summer weather in Gainesville, Florida. We called it Rainsville last night. Dawson was our voluntary weatherman last night. It works out for us. Plenty to cover. We'll talk about the Vols and Gators matchup as well as Darvin Ham gets the can. In Los Angeles, as always, we'll give our best bets at the end of the hour. Plenty to cover. We appreciate you joining us today. 865-288-3131, your number if you want to hop in and join. Let's dive into it. First things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's first things first topic is Vols, Gators, and Rainsville. With just three weekend series remaining, number three Tennessee is entering the home stretch of the regular season as it heads to South, to Gainesville for a showdown against the SEC East rival Florida at Condren Family Ballpark. The Vols were slated, as I stated earlier, to play last night, their second consecutive Thursday through Saturday series, but Thursday series opener was postponed due to inclement weather, resulting in a game of the year on Tuesday, starting at 3 p.m. on Friday. Despite dropping their first midweek game of the year on Tuesday, the Big Orange enter the series red hot in league play, having won 10 of their last 11 SEC contests. The projected starters in game two and game three, Drew Beam, right-handed pitcher, 11 games this season, 6-1 on the year, 3.29 ERA, is slated to be the starter for the Vols. TBD on the Florida starter. Game three on Saturday will be left-hander Xander Sechrist, 11 games on the year, 1-0 with a 3.89 ERA. And left-handed pitcher Jack Caglione will have the ball on Sunday, or I guess Saturday, and he boasts a 4.10 ERA on the year, 5-0 as well. So yesterday we broke down this game in anticipation for the game being last night, and I'm going to try and tie it into what we've seen so far today. Obviously, the game is yet to go final, but in the final moments of it right now, yesterday we talked about containing Jack Caglione on. He's very, very good. I mean, we read it yesterday. The Florida leader in running hits and home runs, slugging percentage, times gotten on base, everything. Like, he literally does everything.
Basically every stat.
Everything is what Caglione does. We were talking about trying to find a way to contain him. And for the most part today, you did. He only goes 1-for-4, was able to extend his 23-game hit streak in the eighth inning on a single. But I thought the Vols did a really good job containing him in game one today. I thought the pitching was a pretty good effort. Bottom of the eighth, I think you did a really good job of getting out of a sticky situation as well. No outs, two runners on base.
That's because that's exactly what you've got. Again, first and second, no right. outs for Florida. Kirby Cannell is out of the bullpen now, okay, with nobody out facing his first batter as we speak.
This is why it's fun to do it during the game, because I'm talking about how well we did in the bottom of the eighth, and now we're in the same situation here. But again, going back to that instance, though, you're able to get out of a tough situation, get a double play, and take it to the top of the ninth. I thought that was really big. Billy Amick had a really big performance early on both sides, getting it going on the bat and also getting it done defensively. I thought a good performance from him. But coming out of the gates hot, getting those two runs off the board quickly, kind of setting the tone. Now Florida comes in, settles in, ties it up at 2-2, but then your offense settles back in and gets going. I thought that was a nice start considering what this team looked like on Tuesday against Lipscomb. So I thought that was big. Obviously, now in the final moments of the game, let's hope we can get out of this similar situation. So far from the game, what were your takeaways?
The offense is not really back. I'm not going to say back to form. Now, Florida is still an SEC team, so you're not going to score 25 runs against Florida. But, you know, to see them get too early, I said one of my keys yesterday was, let's get a quick start. Well, they got a quick start, about as quick as you could turn around. It was 2-0 Tennessee. And on a double steal play, nonetheless, that was cool in the second to score the second run, a delayed steal.
Yeah.
So you're getting them in creative ways, too. The pitching's been what we wanted. Again, another one of my keys yesterday was get a good start on the mound. Mm-hmm. This first game is so crucial in terms of how your pitching's going to set the tone, and they've done so far today. Now, they've had to get out of some jams.
Yeah.
And actually, this is kind of fun to watch it in real time. Cannell got the first out, a fly out to center, held the runner at second, so still first, second, still two on, but it's Kirby Cannell. I mean, you got to feel pretty good with Kirby Cannell in the game. Good stuff from the pitching, good stuff from the hitting all around. I mean, to be kind of thrust into a bad situation is, this might do it. Turn, game over. So there you go. Game final, double play, turned by Cannell. They turn a 6-4-3 double play, and Tennessee wins game 1-6-2.
All right, good deal. That is breaking news here on
Overtime.
Right
to the breaking news desk.
Yeah, breaking news on Overtime. Tennessee wins game 1. 6-2 over Florida. A very similar situation you had in the bottom of the eighth, you have in the bottom of the ninth. Two runners on, no outs. A double play seals the deal once again. So, again, kind of that repetition of, okay, you're on the road against a very talented Florida team. You face a tough situation, and you're kind of in a pickle. You're able to get out of it. And I thought the pitching was really, really good today after kind of taking a step back against Lipscomb. Hopefully this is the start of kind of picking things back up and having this pitching staff kind of become one of the backbones of this team.
Well, another thing that was big in today's game, at least, is you only use three pitchers.
Yes.
Stamos threw two innings. Causey threw about 70 pitches in his outing. And now Cannell, you only really used two. Cannell threw about 8 pitches in his outing in the ninth inning. So realistically, if you need him again, probably not today, but say tomorrow, you could absolutely throw him after Sechrist, which has been the formula on Sundays as it is.
Yeah.
You could see him or Snead again tomorrow, should maybe Snead gets used here in game 2. But nonetheless, you saved arms as well.
Okay, so now that it's been final, Tennessee gets the win. This is obviously a unique situation, having to play back-to-back. But going into this next game, what should the approach be? I thought you played well today in the first matchup, but obviously, you know, it's humid, it's hot, you're playing back-to-back games. I thought the strike zone got a little bit wider today as well as a result of that. So in the second game going in, what should Tennessee's approach be?
I mean, I think you should just keep doing what you're doing, pitching-wise especially. You got a really nice start pitching-wise. That should give you a lot of confidence. And now especially, you know, you throw Causey out there in game one. This is kind of – it's kind of funny. It's almost the same thing that we've seen with Russell and Causey back-to-back, but more in a back-to-back game. So they see Causey for 6 innings now. They're going to go out and see Drew Beam, who's a completely different pitcher. Completely different arm release spot, completely different style. He can get up into the high 90s, which Causey, you know, is not really – he's more of a junk baller. He's more of a, you know, I'm going to throw you 82, 85.
Yeah.
Beam can throw you 98. You can change that pace. So keep doing what you're doing defensively and pitching-wise. And, look, there were some really good at-bats today.
Yeah.
And I thought that was what kind of stuck with me the most. Yeah, you didn't score 15 runs, but you had some long at-bats. You worked for some really long at-bats, and that's something that we did not do the past three games.
Yeah, I think also getting on base, you know, trying to find creases in the defense to where you're able to keep the ball in play, keep it alive. Again, going back from that, you know, Tennessee's not just a home run team. Doesn't matter what the guy sitting next to Rainey in a Missouri jersey thinks.
Weren't today.
Yeah, and it won today.
Two extra base hits resulted in 6 runs.
So. Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's why I think this Tennessee team is different. And we've talked about it on here numerous times. I think this Tennessee team does a better job of getting on base and keeping it in play. And as a result, you're able to get out of some tough situations, able to extend games. And you know, as we saw today, extending at-bats, extending the amount of time, the amount of pitches Florida's pitchers are going. And in a game like this where you're playing back-to-back games, you tire these guys out, keep them on the field, it plays into your advantage.
Yeah, in Brandon Neely's 4 innings of work today, Tennessee worked 8 at-bats that were at least 6 pitches long.
Yeah.
That's something that was not there the last 3 games. Most notably, Dean Curley fouled off 3 2-strike pitches in his first at-bat before shooting an RBI single to right field in a 9-pitch effort.
That's the kind of stuff you need to get the offense back going.
That's reading what you're being given. And also, you know, Gene Kerley caught some strays on the fan run radio airwaves this week. Betty Spaghetti was the name.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, performances like that is why he continues to stay in the lineup. And that's what we said on the drive. And that's why we have formed an alliance between the two of us. You have to keep him out there because of what he does at the plate. And performances like that, 9 pitches in an at-bat, that's how you win games and tire out an opposing pitcher and opposing defense. He did that today. Tennessee now improves to 38-8 overall, 16-6 in SEC play. Vols have also won 11 of their past 12 SEC games.
I was just
going to
note that. Yep.
You know, talk about getting hot at the right time. Because, you know, heading into the postseason, heading into the SEC tournament, you want to be playing your best baseball. That's exactly what the Vols are doing right now.
Well, it's what this team didn't do last year. You know, last year, bad start in SEC play. This year, bad start in, I won't say bad, but rough start in SEC play. Last year was a bad start in SEC play. And they never really fully recovered. You know, they recovered to win a few series. They recovered to win some games and kind of contend a little bit and then make it back to Omaha. This year, they got a rough start in SEC play, and it's like, you know, you go into the Missouri – or not the Missouri series. You go into the Georgia series a few weeks ago, and it's like a switch flips. And this team is just like, oh, okay, we're back. We're in the groove. And now this weekend, you go down to Florida after a rough couple days in Missouri, and you're like, all right, switch flipped. We're back on. We're playing the best baseball.
I want to talk about Kirby Cannell here for a second, though, because I think this season he's been thrown in a couple of really tough situations – and has been able to pull the Vols out of it. And that's a guy come postseason time. And we saw it last year. There were a lot of times Tennessee was in a, you know, back against the wall situation. You need a pitcher to come in and close the deal. Kirby Cannell has been that for you this season. How much of an impact is he on this team?
Oh, he's massive, but it's the importance of having a veteran guy.
Yeah.
And to have this guy that's been around the program now for 4 years, 5 years, and has seen it all, seen all kinds of situations. Now to be able to use him in that workhorse, clutch pitcher, closing role is so massive to have for this team. You know, it reminds me of Redmond Walsh. Redmond Walsh did that a couple years ago, the 2021 season. There's been a couple guys that have done that. But even Todd Helton. Todd Helton was that guy for the Vols for a long time. So to have Kirby Cannell be that guy, that veteran that you know is going to come in and be lights out, it's really big for this team.
Yeah, and in this situation today, if two more Florida hitters got on base, Jack Caglione would have been up to bat. So like that's a situation where, okay, you've kind of – look, you're up 6-2, right, bottom of the ninth. You've done your job all game. You need a guy to come in and close the door. Cannell does that, prevents Caglione from coming up and possibly, you know, opening this thing up, taking this to extras, or possibly winning the game. So I think having a guy like Kirby – is huge, especially come playoff or come postseason time. And again, that veteran leadership, that guy that knows, you know, no moment's too big for him, right? Mm-hmm. And he comes in and is poised as ever. Game two set to start in about 45 to 60 minutes. Do we have any? Is there any rain in the area today?
It didn't look like it on the broadcast like, today. Yeah, it looked like it was nice and sunny for once.
Well, I'm sunny and humid, I'm sure.
Probably gross.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. The ballpark, very nice ballpark Florida has.
It was muggy here. I can't imagine what it was down there.
I know. I noticed that today. So, especially wearing those pants and playing back-to-back games, that's yuck. Mm. All right, well, that's any more thoughts before we hit a break? It's tough because for our listeners, you know, it's tough because we're coming in watching the game. Don't get a ton of prep work for it, right? We're just kind of watching as we go, giving a couple storylines. Anything else during the game?
Key stats, Tennessee's 1-4 hitters today went 10 for 19 with a walk and 3 RBIs, and that's notable because no Kavaris Tears.
Yes.
So to, you know, replace Tears with Dryling in that top four and still see that kind of production, and also – I mean, you want to get Blake Burke and Billy Amick and those guys and Christian Moore going, especially after Moore. I mean, Christian Moore had a dismal weekend against Missouri.
Yeah.
So you want to see those guys get back into the rhythm. They were good. Now, the 5-9 hitters were not. 2-for-16 today, 3 walks, a hit by pitch, and 3 RBIs now.
Yeah.
You got the RBI support from them. You would like to see a little bit more on the hit train.
Yeah. Well, they'll look to improve that in game two. We'll continue to monitor it. I guess any more things, anything else we should cover, any more takeaways from the game?
Not a ton right now. I mean, obviously nothing that we're not going to cover after, you know, watching game two.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, we'll head to a break real quick. When we come back, the Lakers have made a big change at their head coach position. Darvin Ham gets the can. We'll return and talk about it.
Looking for a luxury RV getaway? Then come see Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Just imagine a personal oasis on the French Broad River with outstanding amenities just minutes from the Great Smoky Mountains. Enjoy the quiet, private setting on sites offering unexpected beauty and tranquility. Unplug from everyday life and plug in to the serenity of life on the river, big mountain skies, and bucket list sunsets at Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Serenity in the heart of it all. Visit tworiversrvresort.com.
Who's ready to watch your Southern League champs take the field for a fantastic 2024 season? All season long, your favorite nights are back, like Star Wars, Margaritaville, 4th of July, UT Night, and so much more. And don't forget, awesome daily promotions too, like All You Can Eat Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, Summer Fireworks Series, and Family Fun Day Sunday. Get your tickets for your favorite night now at SmokiesBaseball.com.
Blackford Veterinary Surgery Referral specializes in surgeries not regularly performed by your pet's general veterinarian and currently accepts referrals from vets all across the country. With their newly renovated state-of-the-art surgery center and their highly trained staff, clients can rely on professional and thorough care. If your vet says that your pet needs surgery or rehabilitation, ask for a referral to Blackford Vet and let them get your best friend back on its feet. Located conveniently in West Knoxville. For more information, visit BlackfordVetSurgery.com.
In a world filled with deadlines and screens, sometimes we forget the simple joys of life, days filled with special moments. At Inward Half, we understand the essence of these moments. Feel the difference between our breathable fabrics and flexible apparel as you disconnect from the hustle and bustle and reconnect with what truly matters. Inward Half, simple luxury for on and off the course.
The Atlanta Braves are back with a loaded roster of young talent and some new faces in the A. It's going to be another wild season.
3-1 hit high in the air to deep center field. Nimmo's going to go back to the track. Here it comes. Home run right over the wall.
105.7 FM, 1340 AM. Online at fanrunradio.com and streaming on the free Fan Run Radio app, Fan Run Radio. Big Orange Country's radio home of the Atlanta Braves.
All right, back here on Overtime, our initial thoughts on the Game 1 matchup between Tennessee and Florida in the first segment. Now we head to the phones where we have Joshy Boy on the line. What's up, Joshy?
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, man.
That's a really good Game 1 win against the Gators.
I agree.
We agree.
Yeah. So what's your thoughts on Game 2 tonight against Florida?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to kind of gather your thoughts after the game happened just, you know, a couple minutes ago, and now you got to turn around once again and play. But I think it's, you know, just keeping up what you were doing. I think that's all you can do. You got a really good pitching performance from A.J. Causey, and, you know, Kirby Cannell comes in and closes the deal.
And you only use three pitchers.
Exactly. Yep. And really, and as Dawson pointed out, you really only use two because I think Cannell could go again on Sunday.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, so if you can get that similar pitching production in Game 2 where guys batting are going to be a little bit more tired out, probably going to be a little bit more likely to swing and kind of force it a little early, that's an avenue for Tennessee to get some quick outs and get this thing going. I think it's really important, though, to come out hot offensively again, go ahead and put Florida down quick so that they're trying to play catch-up instead of giving them a win. That's a very talented team.
Right.
So I think just a hot start, continuing the pitch. And Dawson, anything to add?
No, I think you pretty much hit it. Again, if you can get some runs first or second inning, just like you did in Game 1, both teams are going to be tired in this game. That's just how it is playing in this kind of environment, playing back-to-back nine-inning games. Both teams are going to be tired. Any advantage you get in the first two innings is massive, and you hand a lead over to the guy that – yeah, may have started a little bit rough, but he's your ace for a reason, Drew Beam, and he has been fantastic the last few weeks.
Yeah.
William and Dawson, I just want to answer real quick before I break down the T-Wolf Nuggets series. You guys said a few days early ago you guys like the Nuggets against the T-Wolves, right?
Yes, and I still do.
What about you, Dawson?
I do, but I also think it's going to be a really good series.
It'll be a great series. I just think the Nuggets are a little bit better. But
I really think that it's going to go seven games because I think the X factor for Minnesota is both Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns, because I don't think Denver is going to have an answer for Anthony Edwards. What do you guys think?
Well, look, I think matchup-wise, I think Michael Porter Jr., Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Aaron Gordon, all those guys are capable of staying in front of Anthony Edwards. The problem is, then, you know, the lesser of those three is going to have to guard Karl-Anthony Towns. So I think most likely you're going to see either KCP or MPJ on Anthony Edwards. I think Gordon will stick Cat because of his size. So, the Nuggets have to find an answer for Cat and Anthony Edwards. But on the other side, you know, the Timberwolves have to find an answer for Jamal Murray because they've got one for Jokic and Rudy Gobert. But who's taking Jamal Murray?
Mike Conley's not going to guard Murray.
Well, he shouldn't. Should not, yeah.
But what do you guys think about the line tomorrow in tonight's game one? The Nuggets are favored by 4.5 points tomorrow night.
It's pretty fair.
It's fair. I mean, when you look at a lot of these lines, unless it's like the Celtics and Heat series, all these are relatively close. And especially when, you know, if this game were being played in Minnesota, I think Minnesota would probably be favored, right? The home court advantage plays a big deal, and especially with that altitude. I think Nuggets minus 4 is fair.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you guys a question.
Okay.
So, LeBron James, you guys know I'm a Lakers fan. So, LeBron James, I'm going to reference him as LeFraud James.
Okay.
Do you think Jordan or Kobe would ever lose 8 or 9 times in the finals and still be called the GOAT? Because LeBron's lost 9 or 10 times in the finals in I don't see LeBron as the GOAT because it was a different era. I get it, but Jordan and Kobe are better than LeBron as a player.
In terms of the finals losses, I agree that is an alarming stat. But remember who Jordan had on some of those Bulls teams? They were really – I mean, some of the best teams of all time. Remember who Kobe had on some of those Lakers teams in the early 2000s? Those, even beyond Kobe and Shaq, those teams were really good. They had some really good playoff players in those games.
2009 and 2010, Kobe really didn't have those superstar players.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. Outside of the big three in Miami, though, I mean, LeBron, what, the 2018 Cavs team?
2018 Cavs team.
Lost to that. Yeah. Was that the record-breaking Warriors team, or was that the year? That was the year after the record-breaking Warriors team. That was the Kevin Durant Warriors team.
Yeah, 2018 was Kevin Durant's second year there.
Yeah, that was the when Durant didn't get – Durant got hurt in 2017.
In 2019 he did. That was in the Raptors series. But in 2018, the cover for that series featured, for the Warriors, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant. The other side of that cover was LeBron James, J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, and Tristan Thompson.
Exactly.
But that's besides the point. Josh, let me ask you this. Would you rather lose in the first round, like Michael Jordan did 3 times? LeBron's only done it twice.
Right.
Or go all the way or lose in the finals? Which one do you rather do? Lose in the first round or lose in the finals?
I'd rather lose in the finals.
Yeah. So
Michael
Jordan has lost more times in the first round than LeBron has. Michael Jordan has lost more times in the second round than LeBron has. So my thing is, I'd rather get as close as I can to winning a championship than going to Galveston, Texas in the first round.
Right.
Jordan did go 6-0 in the finals. So.
You guys know the main reason I'm a Lakers fan is because Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
I love him.
I love Kobe too.
Yeah.
He only lost 2 times in the finals, I think, to LeBron's. Three or four times, right?
In the NBA Finals?
NBA Finals, LeBron's...
Yeah. LeBron's 4-6.
4-6.
4-6, yeah.
Did Kobe... I think Kobe went undefeated, unblemished too, did he not? I can't think of a time where he lost in the finals.
I don't think
Well, to the Pistons and to the Celtics team, 08 and 04.
Yeah.
Okay, then yeah.
Yeah.
So 4-2 for him?
Yeah. 5-2. So would you guys, with a last-second shot, you either have to hit it on a game-winning 2 or 3, who would you rather have, LeBron, Kobe, or LeBron? Or LeBron, Kobe, or Michael? What I'm saying.
Oh man.
Let me pull this up so I can crush him.
Okay. You gonna pull like game winning shot percentage? Is that is that a stat you can find?
I've already got it. Joshy, let me pull this
up. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, here, go. You give your answer and I'll
without looking at stats. I'm not looking at any stats. Just top of my head. I'd probably say Kobe myself, but that's just my personal answer.
Here we go. LeBron James shoots 60% on go-ahead three-point shots in the final minute of playoff games. The number one player of all time that fits that criteria. He's 3-5.
That's fair.
Let's look where Kobe Bryant's at 16. He went 1-6 in the final minute on go-ahead three-pointers.
Dang.
Steph Curry, 1-8.
I mean, the question wasn't a game-winning three. It was a game-winning 2 or 3.
Okay, but
– 2 or 3, yeah.
Okay, well, fine. Well, I mean – you can, I mean, there are multiple moments where LeBron is.
That's, I'm not discrediting it. I'm just saying the question wasn't game-winning three.
Okay. Well, okay.
I'm not discrediting your answer. I know.
I'll still take LeBron,
though,
Joshy.
That's fair.
I mean, against the Toronto Raptors in 2018, against the Pacers in 2018, against the Magic when he was a little bit younger.
I remember that game.
He's got moments, man.
Yeah. Guys, switching the football out the door, I'm just going to say this. With Tennessee this year, we don't know their defensive situation. It should be better than last year, but all I'm going to say with this, I'd rather have a 10-2 Tennessee football team with losses to Oklahoma and Georgia rather than losses to Florida and Oklahoma. Wouldn't you guys agree? Have a good night.
Thank you so much for calling in, Josh.
I don't
want to
lose to Oklahoma at all.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I don't either. But.
I don't think Oklahoma is geared enough, like is talented enough to beat you. Personally, anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, brand new quarterback. Well, okay, brand new quarterback doesn't really count, I guess, because you have one too.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. They lost a lot of talent. Now they have a freshman quarterback. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think they're geared up to beat you.
Josh, we appreciate your call. Have a good weekend, man. Going back to your question, though, I definitely take the Oklahoma-Georgia scenario because if you lose to Florida, Florida's going to be a 4-loss, 5-loss, 6-loss team this year. That really eliminates you from the playoff. If Oklahoma's good, that's an early season loss, first off.
That's true, yeah.
So you have opportunities as you go on to beat other SEC-caliber teams. You'll have Alabama at home. And then, the Georgia game, is always going to be a tough one with how good Georgia is.
In Athens this year as well.
I think what dictates the year is if you beat Alabama. And I think a lot of people, and I'm not trying to say Tennessee, should obviously Tennessee's going to respect this game, but I think a lot of people are overlooking it now that Nick Saban's gone and we beat him here last time. Folks, keep in mind, Tennessee hasn't beat Alabama in a very long time outside of 2021 or 2022 when you had Hendon Hooker and Jalin Hyatt and all these guys. So, yes, I understand that they're not the same Alabama team without Nick Saban on the sideline, but this is still a very talented roster and a very talented team. And Kalen DeBoer is no slouch either. I mean, he just had his Washington club in the national championship this year. So I think it's important to not overlook that Alabama game. And I'm not saying everyone does, but I think – I think some people do. They're like, we beat them last year, or beat them last time they played here. We got the better team. No Nick Saban. Can't overlook that game. I've personally looked over Oklahoma a lot, so I'll fall victim to that because I don't know what Oklahoma's offense looks like without Jeff Lebby. They've got a brand new quarterback. Yes, Tennessee does too. But what you saw out of Nico against the nation's top defense last year, 35 points. Was pretty impressive, and that was with a shell of the offense that you had. So I think there are two sides to look at it, but to answer Joshy's question, much rather you know, take the Oklahoma-Georgia scenario, I think a Florida loss.
You can't lose to Florida this year.
Yeah, Florida loss cans your season, in my opinion.
You can't lose to Florida this year. They're not going to be – I don't think they're going to be a good enough team that you can lose to them and say, oh, well, that's still a pretty quality loss.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they play out. Graham Mertz returns, but they've got to find another wide receiver outside of Eugene Wilson, who had a good first half against Tennessee this year early on. No Ricky Pearsall anymore, but their defense got gutted in the portal. They lost a ton of big guys. So we'll just have to see. I'd take Oklahoma-Georgia losses over the Oklahoma-Florida scenario. We appreciate you calling in, Joshy. All right, let's head to the association where Darvin Ham gets the can. The Los Angeles Lakers fired coach Darvin Ham after his second season with the team, which ended Monday in a first-round playoff exit with a loss to the Denver Nuggets, league sources have confirmed. Rumors over Ham's potential firing intensified deep into the Lakers' season and seemed inevitable when they only won one game in their best-of-seven playoff series against the Nuggets. The lowest moment came for the Lakers when they blew a 20-point second-half lead in Game 2 of the series, with a Jamal Murray buzzer beater being the knockout punch. After a successful season as his first year as a coach, in which he showed signs as a leader, the tide turned for Ham this season. There was tremendous respect for Ham as a person, and players appreciated his pro career time and as an assistant coach with Atlanta and Milwaukee. But players struggled with perceived absence of effective direction from the coaching staff after Game 2, and this is one of the most, you know, eye-popping quotes of this series. Anthony Davis was asked about, you know, why this team was able to forfeit a 20-point lead in the second half. He goes, quote, "We have stretches where we don't know what we're doing on both ends of the floor." So my reaction to the firing today is expected. I expected this would happen. I like Darvin Ham, the guy. I like Darvin Ham, the player. I mean, I feel bad for him and all the hate he gets. The Lakers' job is one of the toughest jobs in the world because you're the first punching bag for everyone. Like, you know, like if Kalen DeBoer has a bad season this year, everyone's going to be going right to him because he's following up Nick Saban and how big that program is, right? So anytime you are the coach of a really big team or following up a really big-time coach, there's going to be a lot of pressure on you. Darvin Ham had that pressure. I thought he did well in the first season, but there were times this year where I really raised an eyebrow, and I'll explain them. I'm not a media puppet like all these people are that immediately point to the firing or immediately point to a coach's firing when a team doesn't do well. I don't usually do that. I look for other things. But in this situation, there are too many reasons why it was not working. First off, the lineups. The Lakers, after they won the in-season tournament, no one cares about that, I know, but they showed that they could compete with the best teams on a big stage. And then as the season went on, they struggled. And during a 13-game skid, Darvin Ham put out 6 different starting lineups in 13 games. That showed to me panic, doesn't have trust in what he's doing. And as a player, you're like, what the hell is the guy doing? You know, throwing out 6 different starting lineups in a 13-game stretch, you're not even allowing guys to get any momentum or any consistency. That was the first thing. The second thing is in-game adjustments. He struggles in the in-game. In game one, Rui Hachimura guarded Nikola Jokic 80% of the game, and he got his ass busted over and over and over again, yet no change was made. As a coach, you've got to recognize, okay, the guy that I've got on one of the best players in the league is not doing a good job guarding him. I need to make an adjustment. He didn't make an adjustment until game 2. You know, like, I can see that. You can see that from the TV. Okay, Rui Hachimura, who's, what, 6'8", 6'7",
yeah,
should probably not be guarding Nikola Jokic, who's, you know, a 3-time MVP. So in-game adjustments, he loses. And finally, it's game management, momentum management. There were so many times this season where Ham would just put his hands in his pockets and watch a Lakers lead crumble and dissolve right in front of him and not call a timeout, not do anything to prevent it. In game 5, the Lakers were up 67-58. And before Darvin Ham decided to call a timeout, it was 74-71 Nuggets. A 16-4 run?
Yeah.
No timeout called. You've got to realize what's happening. And I mean, that's just very juvenile coaching. And he's not able to do some of that in the in-game managements and the lineups. And I think as a result, the players don't, I'm sure they respect him, but they don't, you know what I mean? They don't respect him in what he's doing.
Right.
And when you lose a locker room, you lose your job. Dan Mullen at Florida lost the locker room, got fired. You know, Darvin Ham loses the locker room, loses the confidence from his players, he gets fired. I think it's the right move. I hate it for him because I do like him, but there are too many things that jump off the board to me.
I'm not surprised. You said expected. I'm not surprised. He did less this year with basically the same team that he had last year, despite them being fresher when he got to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Despite them having less injury problems when he got to the playoffs. Combined with an underwhelming regular season, again, by the way, the second straight underwhelming regular season, to land in the play-in games, and the fact that the team blew double-digit leads in every game of their playoff series, it was bound to happen, yeah. And I'm not surprised at all. You mentioned the lineup choices. That was weird. The apparent just lack of coaching. Like, he was just standing there behind the bench, but he wasn't doing anything. He was just there to cheer on the team, I guess, or something. Mm-hmm. He may as well have bought a ticket at times this year. They need to have somebody that's active on the bench, especially with a team like this. You need to have somebody that's active instead of a guy that just doesn't have any direction, didn't know what he was doing at times. And look, this is the reality of the NBA. If you don't win quickly with a roster like this that has this kind of star power, that has these kind of complementary pieces, you're going to get canned.
Yeah.
You had two chances to win with, again, the same team both years and couldn't get to the mountaintop either time. The regression this year, the early playoff exit, it obviously made this decision very easy, in my opinion. And I compare it back to the Phoenix Suns last year get knocked out early, and Monty Williams gets canned. Yeah. 2 years removed from a run to the NBA Finals.
One of the best in the game, too.
Where you had a 2-0 series lead in the NBA Finals. 2 years later, he's canned because you're losing in the first round. It's the reality of the NBA, and it catches up to Darvin Ham today.
Yeah, 865-288-3131, talking Lakers firing Darvin Ham. During Ham's two-year tenure, the Lakers went 90-74 in the regular season, 9-12 in the postseason. The Nuggets also ended the Lakers' season last year with a four-game sweep in the Western Conference Finals. Now kind of trying to pinpoint where it went wrong for Ham. This offseason, I thought the Lakers did everything they needed to do. I thought they nailed the offseason because you were able to return guys from last year's run, the impromptu run at the trade deadline. You keep Rui Hachimura, re-sign Austin Reeves, you retain D'Angelo Russell, and then you bring in Gabe Vincent, who had a hell of a playoff run last year. You bring in Taron Prince, a guy that shoots 38% from the three-point line on his career. That's a guy that can win games. And they've got length, they had size, they had depth. I really like what the Lakers did. But after the in-season tournament, something clicked, and it wasn't the same. Their defense took a big downturn. And the thing is, you had LeBron and AD healthy for a majority of the season, like not missing games. AD played a career high this year. What was it, like 76 games?
Right.
And the defense took a big downturn. However, in the last 2 months of the season, you really got the wheels turning. But I think the moment that kind of turned the tide was that 13-game skid after the in-season tournament and right before the All-Star break, where you were trying to figure out what the hell was going on, multiple lineups, dropping games to teams you should beat. The Lakers should not be in a competitive game with the San Antonio Spurs or, you know, the Detroit Pistons or the Atlanta Hawks. They were in competitive games with those teams in Crypto.com Arena. So, you know, I think that this team has the potential. They had the lineup and they had the roster. I know it's a 39-year-old LeBron James. It's a tough scenario. But I think during that skid, you started to lose the locker room. And then when you get ousted in the first round by the same team you got swept by last year, it's a tough way to say, let's bring that guy back after two, you know, you're what, 1-8 against this team in the last, you know, nine games in a playoff series, right?
I think it's 0-8.
Well, they won one game.
Oh, yeah. 1-8.
Yeah, 1-8 this year. So 1-8 against this team that really you did all those offseason moves to build to beat this team. And I did think it was the best time to play him because you were playing the best ball, you were healthy. But, you know, having multiple double-digit leads leading for 75% of the series and only coming out with one win, it's a tough way to look at it.
In general, you could say it went wrong both times you got matched up with the Denver Nuggets in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if you face any other team, even this year, I think you're probably still playing basketball right now. This was the number one team. I think the Lakers might have been, you know, in terms of talent when they got to the playoffs and ability to win playoff series, probably the second or third best team in the West. And you end on now double-digit straight losses to Denver, 8 straight losses in the playoffs, or 8 losses out of 9, I guess, in the playoffs. And back-to-back, you know, bad, really just ugly series that sends you home. I'll tell you, the moment – I agree. I think the 13-game skid's probably when it started to go wrong. The moment where it really fell off the rails is game 2. When you're up 20 and you fall apart in the fourth quarter and Jamal Murray hits that game winner, that's the moment I was like, if they lose this series, Darvin Ham's gone. There's no way they're going to keep him around. You have to win that game. You do it again in game in 2 of the last 3 games of the series, and then you're really like, okay, if they don't fire this guy, they're doing something wrong. I mean, you're not going to be able to keep that guy around. Averaging 45 wins in the regular season with that roster is also not acceptable. But I agree, it went wrong in the 13-game skid where you were putting out lineups like Prince, Hayes, Dinwiddie. I know we've talked about that lineup a lot on here.
Yeah.
Just no bearing of what he was doing. Mm-hmm. Seemingly just had no business behind the bench at any point.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break real quick. When we come back, we'll do our best bets, and we'll talk about where the Lakers should go now at head coach. Stay right here on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
White Claw delivers a wave of pure refreshment and a variety of flavors. From the originals like black cherry and mango to new flavors like passion fruit and blackberry. Crafted using our unique brew pure process, White Claw delivers a crisp taste with only 100 calories, 5% alcohol, and only 2 grams of carbs. Check out your favorite retailer in store or online for White Claw variety packs, single flavor packs, and 16-ounce single serve cans. White Claw Hard Seltzer. Please drink responsibly.
Are you in need of a smile makeover? Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Costa at Knoxville Smiles, and if you're ready to improve your smile, replace teeth that are missing, make your dentures tighter, add implants to your mouth, whatever you may need, we're here to discuss a wide range of easy, pain-free cosmetic and restorative procedures that can create a glowing, radiant smile that you've always dreamed of. Don't wait any longer. The time is now. Call us today at Knoxville Smiles and schedule your appointment at 865-539-1776 or go online to KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Blackford Veterinary Surgery Referral specializes in surgeries not regularly performed by your pet's general veterinarian and currently accepts referrals from vets all across the country. With their newly renovated state-of-the-art surgery center and their highly trained staff, clients can rely on professional and thorough care. If your vet says that your pet needs surgery or rehabilitation, ask for a referral to Blackford Vet and let them get your best friend back on its feet. Located conveniently in West Knoxville. For more information, visit BlackfordVetSurgery.com.
All right, back here on Overtime. on a Friday. We appreciate you joining us. Time for our best bets of the night. A couple of games in the association. I'll begin with the Cavs and Magic under 199 tonight. I think the Magic get the win, but this has been a series where it's been back and forth defensively. Magic have played well at home in these playoffs. I guess really both of these teams have played well at home in this Cavs-Magic series. I think they get it done once again tonight. We'll go to a Game 7 a little bit later on, but taking the under 199 tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to go a dual little combo bet here for you on the player props. I'll go Paolo Banchero 30-plus points and Magic minus 3.5. If Orlando's going to win this game, they're going to need to have Paolo Banchero. The home team's been the story of the series. Orlando on home floor tonight, I think they win as well. But you need a big performance from Banchero, and, man, he got a big performance out of him in Game 5. Almost were the first road team to steal a game in this series. I think he has a big night tonight. I like him for 30-plus, and I like the Magic to cover.
Yeah, my next best bet is it's a parlay. I don't usually do these, but I'm doing it because I don't want to take the juice on the Mavericks. At, you know, no one's taking money line minus 325, right? So, money line Mavericks, money line Magic, the under 199 in the Cavs Magic, you get to plus 274. I just threw a little quarter unit on it just to feel something, but I like that because I think the Mavericks and Magic both get it done, and I imagine this game to go under in the Cavs Magic game. So my parlay: Mavs money line, Magic money line, under 199.
Is that all of yours then?
Yeah.
I've got two more, so I'll do them real quickly. Mavericks game, you can parlay money line with over 207.5, get you to 140. You could parlay it with a player stat if you wanted to as well.
Okay.
Maybe Kyrie or Luka, obviously coming off big performances in Game 5. So maybe parlay it with Kyrie, 25-plus. I think that's probably a fair one tonight. He's been good in this series for them.
Yeah.
So at 140, it's pretty good. You know, I don't think Dallas covers minus 8. That's a really big spread for this series.
Yeah.
With a series that's had some really close games. I mean, it's had a couple blots, but it's had a few close ones, so I don't like minus 8. That scares me a little bit.
Yeah.
The scoring has started to increase as the series has gone on. It started as a really defensive series, but it has ramped up, and it'll ramp up again tonight. Season on the line. You expect big things out of Paul George. You expect big things out of Luka and Kyrie. So I like Mavs money line parlayed with over 207.5 in that one. And the last one, I'm getting some faith here before puck drop here in 12 minutes. Forsberg, 2-plus goals tonight in Preds Canucks.
Okay.
We are still waiting on that breakout performance from Forsberg. He leads the team in goals and points in the series, but he only has 2 goals total. Tonight on home ice, after dropping both at home, we'll talk about this game in a little bit, you need your stars to come through and have that big performance to protect home ice. Who better than Philip Forsberg? He might get one early. Maybe that's the case where you get 2-plus. I think he scores one relatively early in this game. You're waiting on that performance. I think tonight's the night. Philip Forsberg, 2-plus goals tonight.
All right. Those are our best bets of the night. Going back to our conversation about the Lakers, now it's time to figure out who is going to be the next coach. 3 candidates have emerged as early options, according to multiple team sources. Mike Budenholzer, former Atlanta Hawks, Milwaukee Bucks head coach. Keep in mind, Darvin Ham came from the Budenholzer tree. Ham was under Budenholzer with the Hawks and Bucks. So I don't know if that's kind of a lateral move, hiring the same guy from the same tree. I don't know. Kenny Atkinson, currently a Golden State Warriors assistant coach, formerly the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, an analytic guy, very smart. I don't know if he'd want to take on this job, however. And then the most intriguing one of them all, J.J. Redick, the ESPN broadcaster and analyst who, among other things, also co-hosts a podcast with LeBron James. Very smart guy. He knows the X's and O's. This would be a very interesting relationship, however, if your podcast buddy starts coaching your team. I don't know if that would work either. Tyronn Lue was another guy that was kind of floated around, but it's come out within the last 2 hours that the Clippers expect to extend him on a contract. Steve Ballmer heard the news of maybe Tyronn Lue being associated with the Lakers and decided to put that to bed. So right now, a couple options out there. Where should the Lakers go?
If you want purely X's and O's, like you want the best scheme guy, so you want to make up for what Darvin Ham did not give you, it's J.J. Redick. Now, the problem is, no experience does not help. Now, he has a ton of playing experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how's that going to – so does Darvin Ham. That clearly did not translate.
Yeah.
But huge – I mean, great mind for the game. Incredible mind for the game. Very interesting, by the way, to watch the podcast, especially when he's talking X's and O's. Really great film analyst. I mean, just he teaches you, he shows you something that maybe you haven't seen before every time you watch him analyze the game. So if you want something for that to make up for Darvin Ham, it's Reddick. Realistically, you're going to want somebody that has been there, done that, I think. And I think that's another thing that Ham lacked. Budenholzer feels like the best option for that. Champion with the Bucks, right? He was on that Bucks team that won the 21 finals. So Ty Lue would fill that box as well. Obviously, now we've learned in the last couple hours that that option is off the table, or is working on getting off the table. You just want somebody who's been there for a while, somebody that knows the caliber of this job and is, you know, kind of built for the caliber of this job. It's probably Budenholzer. I'm sure there's other names out there too, but I'm just going off the names that you provided already.
Yeah. I think in this situation, as I said earlier, very hard job to have. You know, it's not a very appealing job either, because in reality, when you think of this, you know, from 30 feet above, it's okay, you're the coach for the next 2 years until LeBron leaves, and if it doesn't work out, then you're probably gone, right? So, you know, you got to think about these candidates now. They're thinking that in the back of their head as they're going into this stuff. The Lakers are already a very, it's a tough fan base to appease, tough situation to thrive in Los Angeles. The other thing, I think if you go fire or go hire a guy that hasn't won a championship, then there could be a little bit of a rift in there. Like, okay, well, this guy hadn't even won a championship, and you got guys in that locker room that have. So, you know, I'd kind of look for that championship prestige. The ultimate goal is to win championships. LeBron's got 2 years left. Anthony Davis is still playing in the prime of his, prime years of his career. The window to win is now. You've got to have a guy that has some of that experience, and that is Budenholzer. You know, Atkinson has been around the league and been around, you know, the NBA Finals, but as a head coach hasn't won. J.J. Redick has played plenty of basketball in his career, very smart mind. I don't know the dynamic, however, of LeBron and Redick. I don't know how that's going to work in the locker room. I mean, it's like saying, hey, you know, it's like your buddy coming and coaching you. You know, and that might rub players the wrong way. I do think Redick's very smart. I think he should have an opportunity to coach if he wants to. But, you know, we saw the Brooklyn Nets a couple of years ago go hire a buddy, Steve Nash, and that thing didn't work out. Steve Nash was on record saying, I wanted to get out of there before they even fired me. So, I don't know. There are a lot of ways to look at it. I think Tyronn Lue would have been the home run hit because he's got the experience with LeBron. He knows how to treat his stars well, even though he lets – you know, a couple of them sit out too much and the other locker room in Crypto.com arena and the Clippers. But I think you need to find a guy with championship pedigree, and you need to have a guy that is going to be respected by that locker room. I think that would be Budenholzer. And then I don't know where you go from there. I think it would have been Lou if he didn't. You know, you'd have to trade for Tyronn Lue, though.
Yeah, what are the details on that? What would you have to give up for that?
First round pick. But then that limits your opportunities this summer, because the Lakers do have a lot of picks now, because, you know, the AD trades and all that, and they were also able to get a lot back, sending away the guys they did last year to go, you know, bring in D'Angelo Russell, Russell Westbrook they traded away. So they do have room to use these picks, but you would like to use them to bring in another star or bring in another, you know, complimentary pieces, right?
Yeah, you'd like to use those on players and not a coach.
That yeah, but you know, look, but I will say, I think coaching in the NBA sometimes gets overlooked because a lot of people are just like, okay, these are the best players in the league, they know how to play. But I think in some situations like this Nugget series, I thought Mike Malone ran circles around Darvin Ham. The in-game adjustments were great. The game management was great. A lot of times, you know, Eric Spoelstra, for example, the reason why the Miami Heat were in the playoffs this year. It's because of Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Jaime Jaquez, you know, who was playing at UCLA just a year ago. Like, you've got guys that were not supposed to be in those situations, but were there because of who you had at head coach. And I think the Lakers have to hit on a guy that has championship experience and will be respected in the locker room. Hiring an assistant coach, I don't think is gonna go the right way.
Nope.
I think Budenholzer would be the home run. I like J.J. Redick. I just don't know how that dynamic will work.
I don't know.
All right, when we come back after the break, the Bucks and Sixers are headed to Galveston. We'll talk about the Knicks 76ers series, the Bucks Indiana Pacers series. We'll have In the News with Dawson Wise a little bit later on. Stay right here on Overtime.